When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
All right. Janice is also here.
Yeah.
Along with our Bruce Paul.
Bruce Paul.
I like that one.
That's
Bruce
good.
Paul engineer. Uh-huh. Yeah. We're going to talk about fitness again this time.
Well, it's very important.
I'm getting back to my roots a little bit.
I know. Ever since you gave yourself that spanking a couple weeks back.
Yeah. I know it. I was saying, you know, and... It's like, which of course you helped not at all.
In fact,
I even went back and I listened to one of them where I said, I'm really working on this. And you said, you're making progress. And I said, yeah, you know, I am making progress. Right again, you know, and you did nothing.
Yeah, but you're giving me too much to think about during the show.
What are you talking about?
You're making me.
All you got to do is enjoy.
Yeah, I know, but I have to think too. You're making me think about your nose, and now you're not allowed to swear anymore because you told me that you're not allowed to swear
anymore.
Yeah,
no swearing. I can't say it's like, and you know.
That's too much for me. I got to concentrate on other things.
Well, maybe Bruce can help me. Jeez. Good grief. Anyway, I've become so darn broad in my ability to talk on a wide swath, thank you, of categories from nutrition to motivation to fitness that I've abandoned my roots. So I thought we might chat about it a little bit.
All right.
I want to first talk a little bit about recovery. Yeah, real simple. I talk a lot about the importance of recovery after a hard workout. And I've said it a million times. Think of exercise as the architect and recovery as the builder. You do damage when you exercise, and recovery is where the progress is made. If you don't properly recover, you're not going to get the most out of your exercise routine. And in fact, you might even make yourself more susceptible to injury. So real simple, you want to eat. You want to eat when you're done working out. Now, obviously, you need to eat a little something before you go to the gym. I like to say about an hour before you train so that you don't have all that blood going into your stomach to digest food. But you also don't want to have a total blood sugar crash where your energy drops and you're wiped out. So I like to say a small snack with a little bit of carbohydrate, complex carbohydrate, a little bit of protein. Something like almond butter on apple slices is a good choice. And then after the gym, You want to eat within, they say it's called a golden hour, about an hour after you train to try to replenish amino acids. Again, you want to go back to a little bit of carbohydrate, a little bit of protein. If you're going on a hardcore endurance workout, if you're training for a marathon or something of that nature, you're going on that long bike ride for 50 miles down from Santa Barbara to Los Angeles, and you know who you are. Make sure, you know, you nutbags out there, you know who you are. A lot of them happen to work for me. That said, get electrolyte replacement. You know what's great for that is coconut water is actually fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, coconut water filled with potassium, magnesium, real good choice. So replace your electrolytes as well. Your static stretching should, of course, come after the workout. And then we used to believe that massage was one of the best ways to get blood flow going again. And after you do something, for example, like cycling, you get what's called blood pool. All the blood, all the fluid goes into your legs. And they used to think that massage was the best way to help recover. But now studies are showing that's not the case, that static stretches and elevating your legs. So if you're a cycler, you go on that long bike ride, the best thing you can do is get off of the bike and elevate your legs. Lay on your back and put your feet up. And it's the best way to get those fluids moving again. If you're a runner and you're training for, let's say, a marathon, you're doing distance runs. Mm-hmm. This is awful. And I can't believe I'm going to say that. But a 10-minute ice bath where you just soak your lower body.
Oh,
I know.
Seriously?
It's torture. We used to have one of those at Biggest Loser,
man.
Though. We used to have, my God. They would jump into this cold pool. But it helped prevent injury like nobody's business because it would immediately reduce swelling and inflammation.
Oh, it's just so, just the thought of it.
I know it. 10 minutes, or you could use an ice pack, you know, the frozen peas or what you, which is much far less painful. But I'm sorry, if you're training for a marathon, you're that kind of nutbag, you should be able to take 10 minutes in the cold water.
Yeah.
Especially the overuse. Those, you know, people always tell me, I'm training for a marathon, I'm training for a half marathon. I highly recommend it. It's a great way to prevent injury when you're doing those distance runs. And then swimming, a really important stretch that I wanted to throw out to you guys. Real simple, too. Place your hands on opposite sides of a door jamb. Bring your elbows up so that your forearms are parallel to the ground. Your arms should be about a 90-degree angle, and then gently lean into the doorway. And what it does is it just stretches out those muscles. Yeah, you want to press your palms and your forearms against each side of the door frame, and it stretches out your anterior muscles that tighten up, and you get those shoulders that rotate forward. It opens it back up again. So for every sport, your best bet is to Google the stretches in particular, which are tough to teach you on a podcast. That one's easy, you know, very easily explained. But with running, do your calf stretches. Make sure if you're getting shin splints that you're icing your shins, you're stretching your calves, stretch your IT band, which I can't really illustrate for you, but Google IT band stretches. If you feel like you can always tell an IT band issue if on the side of your knee, after you run for about 10 or 20 minutes, you feel like there's a slingshot snapping.
Horrible.
Oh, God. It hurts so bad.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I've always hated running, because I have a great guy here that helps me. Literally, your pelvis will shift. Your hips will get out of alignment. And you load up your IT band on one side. Mm. And you can tell this also. Lay on your back and stick your feet straight up against the wall and see if it appears as though one leg is longer than another. Because what that really means is that your pelvis is shifted. Your hips are out of alignment. And that's a great way to tell if you're dealing with iliotibial band syndrome. You'll feel it, but a lot of people don't know what it is. I think it might be patella tendonitis or bursitis. So if it's IT band syndrome, you can do IT band stretches, and you can essentially work it so that you're getting your body back into its natural alignment. But stretching after you work out is way more important. You don't want to stretch before you work out. That's actually a misconception. You can do what's called dynamic stretching, which means that you stretch through movement. So if you're, let's say, a golfer, you'll move through the golf swing with movement, getting a full range of motion, nice and steady, get the blood flow going. But the truth of the matter is that a cardio warm-up is always best because you want to heat up the body and make it more elastic to help prevent injury. So 5 to 10 minutes of cardio is far better, and save the stretching for after the workout. And then I read this really great study on, I've been getting more and more into digestive enzymes lately and trying to learn about what they do in the body. It's quite fascinating. I'll do a segment on it in the future. Mm-hmm. Something to look forward to. A tease for a segment I don't know when. But with that said, I was reading about protease, and you can find this in bromelain and papayan. I never pronounce this stuff right, but it's basically pineapple and papaya. Or you could just take, I will take a probiotic that has digestive enzymes in them now. I've gone for the blend because I can't be taking 8 pills in the morning and 8 pills in the afternoon. But what it does, this protease, it helps the body break down protein. And the better you're able to break down your proteins and assimilate them, the more quickly we're able to recover from our intense workouts. And this one study showed that after 3 weeks, athletes were noticing a significant increase in strength as well as a more speedy recovery time. Huh? Yeah. Now, here's a few tips beyond recovery for you to play with your workouts. Some fun fitness things for you to try out.
I love the tips.
I do.
I love when you give tips.
Do you do like the takeaways?
Yeah, the takeaways.
Yeah, the takeaways. Yeah. All right, well, here we go. This one, real simple. Embrace unsteadiness. And what I mean by that is try to work with your own body weight more. That doesn't mean you can't add like cables, dumbbells, step machines, BOSU balls. It's not that. You can add all of that in, but what I don't want to see so much of are people jumping on the machines at the gym that artificially isolate muscles, that lock you into a position, say a leg extension. You know, you sit down, you strap yourself in, you straighten. That's not how we function in everyday life. We don't ever artificially isolate a muscle. Our body synergizes. And when we don't work out in this way, we're not conditioning our body to function the way we function in everyday life. And if you want to work out your core, if you want to make every workout a core-based workout where you're incorporating strength, endurance, and mid-body muscle, all you got to do is get off of the machines, a lunge. Whenever you're having to stabilize your body, even a squat, even a push-up, all of these things work your midsection. And then, of course, you can start getting into the BOSU ball or exercises on one leg, and you work the stabilizing muscles. But when you do all of those free weight training, the body weight training, yoga, Pilates, martial arts, all those different modalities, and you get off the machines, you make every workout aerobic strength training, but you make every workout a core-based workout. You train the core. Very important. Now, here's another one for you. Something to play with, and I'm going to call this amp up your reps. Now, I don't recommend doing this more than once a week per muscle group. But the first thing you can do, of course, after you're warmed up, is go crazy. Rep out an exercise. See if you can bust out 50, 60 repetitions of something. And it doesn't have to just be, it could be a chest press, it could with dumbbells, it could also be push-ups. You could do it with body weight. Basically, go until you can't go anymore. Max it out. And I don't want you to go into failure to the point of like not being able to lift your arms, but go until you can no longer perform the exercise with good form. Amp out your reps and max out your first set. Then you can go back to 10 reps for the second set, 12 reps, whatever it might be. But the reason for this is that what it basically does is it forces you to push yourself harder, which increases the size and work capacity of your muscles. And remember, we want to shock the body. We always want to give it either a different exercise, a different repetition amount, a different amount of weight that we're lifting. And of course, repetition and weight generally go hand in hand. So if you're changing the reps, you're going to be changing the weights. If you're doing 50 reps, you're going to need to obviously go lighter with the weights. But the more you mix up your routine and you change up the stimulus that you're hitting your body with, the faster the results are going to be. Which brings me to another tip, which is play anything. Try different things. Experience new ways of working out. Because every time you learn a new sport or a new skill, you make your body more versatile and you widen the scope of the physical feats you can achieve. So, you know what? Go out with your boyfriend on the weekends and play basketball with him. Go rollerblading with your kid at the beach. Go for a bike ride. Go play softball with your coworker who is in the softball league. Try new things. Every different sport is going to put a different demand on your body, and it makes you that much more versatile. Going back to, of course, variety being the spice of our fitness success that we just talked about in our last tip. Huh? Tip, Janice. Tip.
Tip.
Okay. And then here's one for people just starting out. Start out slow. Don't go crazy. I think it can be very overwhelming. And, you know, sometimes it's so overwhelming, a lot of fitness experts like myself will tell people, just walk. Just get outside. Yeah, we just want you to move the body. We want you to get out and move the body. But let's go a step further here. That's extremely, extremely basic. Let's say, okay, just walk as much as you can. But let's choose three exercises for your body's major muscle groups. So if we're talking legs, I mean, let's go with a squat, a deadlift, and a lunge for lower body. It's not that hard. You can learn three moves. You know, if we're talking chest, let's say push-up, chest press, dumbbell fly. Three. And then let's go to back. Because, by the way, when you do chest, you're working shoulders, triceps. Mm-hmm. When you're doing back, you're working biceps, forearms. You know, when you're hitting those major leg muscles, you're going to be hitting the calves, the quads, the glutes, the hammies. And then, so chest, we got those three. And then back, let's say seated row, lat pull down, and how about a dumbbell row? Real simple. Bent over, medium grip, dumbbell row, wide grip, lat pull down, seated close grip row. There you go. Three exercises for each major muscle group. You master those, you condition those major muscle groups, and you're going to be in good shape in conjunction with your walking. And then 2 weeks down the road, learn a new move. Add more reps, add more weight, mix it up, add an exercise to your repertoire. But I'm just the walking, just walk, it's a little too basic. I think I feel comfortable saying three exercises per major muscle group. Yeah, I'm done.
No, that's good.
Okay.
That's good advice.
Of course it is.
Oh.
I mean, who do you think you're talking to here? It's good advice.
You know,
I'm like the foremost. It's good advice.
No, I was just because that's very helpful to listen to. I guess that's why you're doing the show, because you want to. You know, maybe we should take a little break.
Okay. Who's next?
No, who's next?
Who?
Myrtle's next.
Your buddy.
My buddy.
All righty.
Yeah. You're stymied by my thought, by what I just said, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah, I know you are.
Yep. Yep. Oh, dear. And scene.
Hey, don't write yourself off yet. It's only in your head you feel left out or looked down on. Just try your best. Try everything you can. And don't you worry what they tell themselves.
All right, my favorite girl is on the line.
It's Myrtle, huh?
Uh-huh.
Your buddy.
I know.
Myrtle Potter.
Love Myrtle.
All right. So for those of you who did not catch our first show with Myrtle, let me tell you a little bit about her. We call her the trusted voice in healthcare. Myrtle Potter is a woman who is running the top biotech companies in the world. Basically knew the healthcare system inside and out. Had an accident, fell off a horse, injured her shoulder, had an adverse reaction to a drug she was taking. No one could figure out what was wrong with her. And basically, here's a woman who is a single mom raising two children, and the doctor walks into her room at the hospital and says, get your affairs in order. And in that moment, our Myrtle Potter, mm-hmm. our beloved, Janice's beloved in particular, you get so excited, it's scary almost, was born. And Myrtle shifted her whole focus in life to helping people navigate the healthcare system. And she's on with us today with a segment all about educating us on how to acquire and utilize our medical history. Myrtle!
Hey.
Hi, buddy.
Hi, how are you?
I am so good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Please. We're so glad to have you. Janice has got her notepad and everything all ready to roll.
I totally do.
My God, you changed our lives with the last time you were on, so we're very excited. So I want to, so today is five prescriptions you won't find in your doctor's bag. Your medical history, use your power. Why is this matter? And what does that mean? What is it? Is it just mine? Is it my family? Explain.
Well, it actually is. It's for you. It's for your family. It's for anybody that you play a role in providing care to.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that is quickly becoming apparent, Jillian and Janice, is that modern medicine has become so sophisticated that doctors can tell so much by knowing more about your medical history. So I actually think it's more powerful than getting genetic tests that might be predictive in some areas. Some
really?
Genetic tests are great.
Okay.
But the basic number one place to start is understanding your medical history and use it to your benefit.
Does that mean your family's history as well, or you just mean you solo?
It absolutely means your family history, and I can't stress that enough.
Okay.
And one of the things we'll talk about in a minute is even the importance of going back one and two generations to get this family history. It can be so predictive about the kinds of things that you might or may not be at risk for, and actually helps you help your doctor take care of you by giving him or her more insight than he would have if he didn't have the information.
Okay. Okay. So where do we start?
Well, I always like to start with your medical records.
Okay.
Having an understanding of what is actually in your medical records is really important. You know, we go to the doctor, we go in, we sit down on the examining table, he examines us, and before you know it, he's either pulled up a screen on a computer or pulled out a manila folder.
Right.
And he starts to scribble. Well, I don't know about you, but until I went through my horrific healthcare situation, I actually never asked to see what the doctors were writing down when they were writing in those folders.
I'm ashamed to say that I never have.
I don't think most people have. And here's why it's important. Number one, you do want to understand what it is that's being written.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, it actually gives you greater insight into how he's reaching his conclusions,
okay,
how he's reaching his assumptions, and it also gives you the opportunity to understand and make certain that what's being written down is actually accurate. And in fact, I will tell anybody that the most important thing in your records are those little notes the doctor's writing. We
really?
Think about the lab results. We think about test results.
Yeah.
But those narrative notes are really important. And so I really encourage consumers to understand what's in their records and then also make sure you know how to go about getting a copy of those records.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, there are things I'm trying to think back to. Like, I remember the first time I had an ovarian cyst break. I was somewhere around 15 or 16, and I remember I went to a hospital somewhere in the valley. My mom picked me up in the middle of the night. And I've often wanted to know more about that because I was a kid. I don't remember how old I was exactly. I don't remember anything that they wrote down. And doctors have wanted to know that information, and I just don't have it. I don't recall when it, you know, any of that stuff. How would... I mean, can you even access things that are that old, or is it just you better ask now from the doctor you're seeing now? Is the old stuff gone forever? Like, what do we do?
So oftentimes old records are tossed.
Ugh, okay.
Although I say often, but it's not always.
Okay.
I think in your case it would be worth it to go back to those doctors and make a request.
Okay.
And in fact, making a request is really easy. I first start out with a list of every doctor I've ever been to.
Okay.
And then you simply put a request in writing and send it to a physician's office and state your name, your date of birth, your address, your Social Security number, and the form in which you'd like to get your records. Do you want Xerox copies? Do you want them scanned? Or do you want them put onto a thumb drive and sent to you? Some offices will actually do that.
Okay.
And as long as you are authorized to get access to those records will be provided to you. Now, each of us individually has access to our own records. There are sometimes exceptions where physicians won't want to release them. For example, if there's someone with a psychiatric disorder,
okay,
and a physician might believe that in reading the record, the patient might do themselves harm. But that is a rare, rare, rare case. 99% of us, we can get access to our records.
And so you basically just provide proof of your identity.
Yeah.
And then all of that. Will you repeat just one more time in case what exactly you need to write down? You said name, age. What was it?
Yes.
Because now I was...
Yes.
I
didn't
have my pen ready.
It's really simple. I'll even tell what the letter says. The letter says, "Dear Dr. Smith,
okay,
I am requesting a copy of my medical records. this is my name, this is my date of birth, this is my address, this is my Social Security number.
Got it.
This is where I'd like you to send my records.
Okay.
And this is the form I'd like you to send them in. Paper, email them to me, scan them to me, put them on this enclosed thumb drive. Provide them with a thumb drive.
Okay, got it.
Yes. Now, here's another really important point. I actually ended up helping someone a couple of months ago who was actually having difficulty getting her records because her physician literally refused to send them. And we had to help her step up the noise on this doctor a little bit, but this is what I want everyone to know. Most states have legislation that requires that your doctor provide you those records within 30 days.
Really?
Yes. You have the
wow.
right. You have the right to your own medical records. And I recommend that everyone keep a copy of their own medical records. You just never know when you're going to need to turn those records over to someone to take care of you in an urgent situation.
Okay. Okay. What is there a consequence if they don't? Can you report them somewhere if they don't give them to you in 30 days?
Absolutely.
So that's when we call you and your company and you,
listen,
you get heavy on them.
That's when you call me. And,
right.
and that's when you call up the chain in your insurance company.
Oh.
You know, lodge a complaint.
Okay.
But the bottom line is that you can get your medical records. They belong to you.
Got it.
They belong to you. Now, some physicians may charge you a nominal fee for getting these records. I personally have never paid more than $20 getting copies of mine.
Got it.
But they may charge a fee just because it costs for them to do the copying
and
the
shipping,
mailing, et cetera.
And the, right.
But it's a really small price for a very powerful tool.
Now, when you say be your own life archivist, what do you mean?
Yes, I want everyone to take a copy of those medical records, and I want them to do three things with them.
Okay.
I want them to check them for accuracy.
What if they're not accurate? That's actually, I got a question about that because I've been doing all kinds of stuff for life insurance. You know, if I die, my business partner comes into a lot of money if I die. You know, and I worry, they say, you know, do you have any of these conditions? Do you have any of that conditions? Have you ever had this or that? And there was something in one of my records that said I had a heart murmur. I've never had a heart murmur. I was like, no, that's wrong. I have never, ever had a heart murmur, ever. You can, you know, check me, do what you need to do. But what do you do if they've got something wrong in there? Because isn't that stuff accessible to all insurance companies?
It's accessible to your insurance company.
Okay.
Generally, when you go into a physician's office and you accept your insurance company's conditions for insuring you and covering your cost, you're also providing the insurance company access to your records. So
okay.
if there's something in your record that is not correct, I would do two things. Number one, I would write a note to the physician
okay.
who's responsible for the error. Really simple. Dear Dr. Smith, I reviewed my records. On this date, it stated I have a heart murmur. I'm writing to inform you that this is incorrect.
Okay.
I don't have a heart murmur. I've never had a heart murmur. Please call me if you have any
yeah,
questions.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I was like, where the hell did this come from? I mean, it was so, and then of course she listened to me and she's like, no, you don't have a heart murmur.
Exactly.
But it was so bizarre. I was, and she had said that, like, maybe he heard something or, you know, whatever. I don't know that it could have even been like a, I was using an inhaler. She's like, were you using an inhaler? And I was like, well, I was there for bronchitis. I don't even remember, but something she thought maybe that had affected something but I don't even have it. You know, and you're right. I would never have known that was in my files had the insurance company not found it from the doctors that I told them, you know, who I had been seeing throughout the years. And, you know, I got to make sure that's off of there because I quite honestly did not write the guy. I was like, oh, all right,
well then the
clear
other
that
thing
up for
that
my
I would
insurance.
Do, Jillian, is I would have the physician document in your record now that you've been checked and you don't have a heart murmur.
Okay, got it.
And that way, if anything ever comes up, whether or not someone wants to give you treatment for this heart murmur you don't have, or you're being excluded from some type of treatment because of the heart murmur,
right.
you've got it documented in your file that it's gone away.
Okay.
You can also take one more step, and that is to contact your insurance company who keeps, you know, a pretty good record of your health history. I would also contact the insurance company. All insurance companies have an 800 customer service number. Tell them what the issue is and ask them where to send the correction.
Okay. Got it. Excellent. Okay, so check for accuracy.
Check for accuracy. Okay. Then the next thing is I really encourage people to get the information organized. Whether or not you organize it by physician or organize it by date, just make sure when you have it in your possession, it's not sitting in five different places in your house, because when you need your medical records, you're generally needing them right away. There's no time to organize which shoebox did I put that in?
I would put them
all together, wrap a rubber band around them, and find a home for these records.
Okay.
If they're paper. Even better than that, because paper can always be damaged, you can always have a fire in your home, even better than that is get them transferred and put in an electronic form. And a Kinko's will do that. Not that I'm pushing Kinko's. Any copy center can do that for you.
Okay. That's actually really clever. Very clever. So organize them and make them readily accessible.
Yes. And then the next thing I ask the people do is make sure that in these medical records, you have two things. You have all of your current medications. Even if you haven't been to a physician recently, list all your medications, list all of your supplements. We talked about this a little bit before when we talked about carrying it with you.
Yep.
You also want that current list sitting in those files, just in case that file has to speak for you when you cannot. And then lastly, I really encourage people to know their family medical history. And that's really my prescription number 4.
Okay. I got a question for you about this.
Yeah.
For example, my mom, both of her parents smoked. Both of them died from lung cancer. Obviously, I don't smoke. And quite frankly, because I watched both of them die from lung cancer, I never even fooled around with it as a kid. I was so pissed about it because I love my grandmother dearly. However, if there's an extenuating circumstance, because then I look at that and I'm like, this is not a genetic marker. I don't smoke. They smoked. That's why they died of lung cancer. Are there certain things that we can rule out? Or should I still be looking at that as though I could potentially be susceptible? Like if somebody was an alcoholic or if somebody, you know, where do you kind of disseminate this was an impact of nurture, you know, the environment, and this is nature? Is there a line, or you just need to know unilaterally and heed that concern?
So I think that's a great question. In terms of documenting your family history, I literally list everything.
Real? Okay.
And part of the medical history in this example, a good form will ask, did your parents smoke? Did they have high blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera?
Right.
Because there are environmental things, there are lifestyle things, and then there are genetic factors. So I encourage everyone to write down everything, but then make absolutely certain that it's known that you had a parent that was a heavy drinker if they died of cirrhosis of the liver.
Gotcha.
That you had parents who were smokers if they happened to have lung cancer.
Okay. Okay.
This is one area, this medical history piece and your own medical history piece, where my counsel is to omit nothing.
Wow.
The smallest little thing can be so instructive and so helpful, especially given these times when physicians don't have as much time to spend with you as they used to. Every little insight, every little clue you can help by giving them really helps them do their job better.
Okay. All right, then. That's good to know, because there are certain things like that I always, especially because I've been seeing nothing but doctors lately, whether it's the adoption or whether it's getting insurance to be on set and do television, or whether it's life insurance policies. I mean, I've been living at the friggin' doctor. And this is where it's like, what's your medical history? How do we get your records? What doctors have you seen? You know, and then it's, you know, what did your grandparents die of? And I think, do I really have to say cancer? Because then they're going to look at me and go, oh, she's a risk. She's a risk when they smoked. But
if you ever have to write down cancer and you knew your parents smoked or your grandparents smoked, I write down mother, you know, cancer in your family. Yes. Who? Mother. And right beside it, even if there's not a blank for it, I will write in, mother was a heavy smoker.
Understood. Good. All right, great. Because there's not a little thing where it's like, did they, lung cancer, question, sidebar, did they smoke? Like, it's not there.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Jillian, you just made me think of something else.
Oh, well, good.
What are these forms? And so I hear what you're saying in terms of what you're going through, visiting all these doctors.
Ugh.
Some of these forms are not complete. Many of the forms differ one to another.
Right.
So I keep a copy of my own form that I have so that when I go to the doctor, I'm not trying to remember when what date exactly was it when I had my shoulder accident? I don't remember the date.
Right.
So,
and then you're guessing. That's so true, because then I've been guesstimating. It's like, when were you first diagnosed with your thyroid issue? And I'm like,
exactly.
I think it was 2006.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, and then they're like, when did you get off of the biothyroid? I'm like, I think it was 2009. I mean, it's it's crazy. You're right.
No, it's really hard. And going to doctors are hard enough. So I keep my own medical history form. I take it with me. My parents have given me permission to keep a copy of theirs.
That's
so smart.
You know,
they're 70 and 80. I can guarantee you when they go in to see a new physician, they can't recall.
Yep.
When it was that they had that surgery in 1950, whatever.
So, right. Exactly.
And here's the other thing I want to offer the listeners, Jillian. I have a couple of really great resources for documenting family history. I'm going to put those up on my website so that
Fantastic.
Your listeners can get access to them for free.
Speaking of, throw that in now. We'll recap it at the end of the show. But just so the website is?
It's www.myrtlepotter.com. And that's spelled MYRTLEPOTTER.com.
Awesome. So you're saying that there, because I just think it's very intimidating. It's like, where do I begin? How do I get this information? So that's great. We can go to your site and you'll have information about how we begin to collect this information.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. And I'll give you some of the sources are mine. Some of them are outside of me, which is fine. I don't always have the best ideas. And these will be
you've got
really
pretty good
helpful,
ideas.
And they're free.
You've got pretty great ideas. I'm pretty happy with your ideas. And I think also you're making such a good point. A friend of mine, she's 30 years old, and had no idea. This is kind of shocking. After she listened to your podcast, she went to her parents and said, you know, can you tell me a little bit about your medical history? I realize I really don't know anything about grandma and grandpa. Her dad had prostate cancer when she was young, and he beat it, but they hid it from the kids because it was so scary, and they never told them.
Oh, my God.
And now she's like, you had prostate? No, wait, no, it was. I'm sorry. It wasn't prostate cancer. It was colon cancer, because she needs to get checked now at 30 years old.
Totally.
And she had no idea. Wow. And they're like, we never told you. You know, you guys were five and it was so scary. And she's like, I have to go.
Jillian.
You know.
Oh, you just gave me goosebumps. You just gave me goosebumps.
Isn't that incredible?
So if the listeners don't do anything else, if they don't do anything else from this podcast, go to your grandparents, your parents, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, and your brothers and your sisters.
Yeah.
And ask them to share their medical history. It is the biggest gift a family can give to itself. It is the biggest gift a family can give itself.
That's so incredible. Yeah, and then she went to her doctor and he was like, well, you're 30 then. You need to get a colonoscopy by 35. She's like, what? And it's genetic in your family now.
Exactly.
You need to get checked early. You got to be mindful of this. And, you know, and then if you went through the diet, are you getting enough fiber? Are you making sure you're doing this? You got to look
out
for that.
Absolutely.
And she never would have even had any idea No idea had she not listened to that podcast and talked to her parents.
Oh,
isn't that
wild?
My
goodness.
I think
of
the secrets that families keep from each other, thinking they're doing each other a favor, because it's like, I don't want to scare you that I have high. I mean, my dad's mom, here's another one. My dad's mom dropped dead at 66 of a heart attack. No one had any idea that she had, you know, cholesterol problems, high blood pressure, and she had been hiding it from the family. So when they went and they checked, there were all these, you know, they had the medical records, the visits, the information, but she never told anyone because she never wanted to scare anybody, and then had a massive heart attack and dropped dead at 66 years old.
Oh, my goodness. That's just heartbreaking.
So,
isn't
I mean,
it?
So that's fabulous advice. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Very welcome. And, it's amazing. As I continue to talk to my parents, I learn a little bit something every single day. Sometimes it's not around health care, like my father had had a security clearance when he was in the Army. You go, where did that come from?
Right,
But talking is a good thing.
Gosh, that's so true. The things we learn about our parents. It's like, I love it. You're like, oh, you have you have clearance. How high was his clearance? Does he know if there's aliens? Are there UFOs?
You know what? My sisters and I were so flabbergasted by the fact that we never knew this. We just thought, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. You know, my dad was a medic in the military, so he actually had it because he was in the Korean War. Oh. And there were times when he was in charge of a unit that would have had to have evacuated civilians during wartime.
How incredible.
So that was the genesis of that.
That's amazing. Gosh. All right, now, last question. You say, use it, don't lose it. Now, what does this mean?
This means use your power. Mm. Use the power of everything that you know about your family's history and your medical history to really get out there and advocate for yourself and take the steps that you need to take to make sure you have the resources and that you're helping those who are trying to help you. Use your voice, use your power, and follow through and make things happen.
Merle, thank you so much. Tell us again a little bit about your company and where we can find you.
You can find me at www.myrtlepotter.com. And it's a brand new website. It's a little baby website, but we're going to be growing it because we are completely committed to helping consumers navigate the complex healthcare system in our country. You know, we're not anti-healthcare system. Our healthcare system does a lot of good for us, but the system is complicated. Mm. And so we serve one purpose, and that's to help people get through it. I also, Jillian, would like to invite people to go find me on Facebook. All they have to do is put in your trusted voice in healthcare.
Excellent.
And they can find me on Facebook, where we'll have lots of great content there.
Thank you, buddy. I do. I follow you.
Follow me on Twitter.
I follow you the whole thing. Thank you so, so much. And you know what, guys? The next time we will have Myrtle on in the next month, we will set it up so that you can ask her questions.
Oh, that would be fun. That's great.
Yeah, get ready, Myrtle.
I'm ready.
Get yourself ready to go.
I am here to serve. I am so happy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Time for a quick break.
Quickie. Very quickie.
Yeah. Whoo, fast.
Very quickie.
And we're back. No, just kidding.
Oh, you know. Wait a minute. Hang on.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take some calls.
All right.
Back.
Awesome.
Okay,
hypnotizing. Could you be the devil? Could you be an angel? Your touch magnetizing. Feels like I am floating. Leaves my body glowing. Hey, hey, be afraid. You're not like the others. Futuristic others. Okay, we are back and we have time for one call. One call.
One call, and it's going to be Mandy.
Better be a good one. The pressure's on for poor Mandy.
Uh-oh.
Mandy,
uh-oh.
We have one call. Don't suck. Poor thing. She's already terrorized. Okay, go.
Okay, Jillian, well, I have a question.
Yes.
I'm about 100 pounds overweight. I got laid off and put on some weight and then had a baby, put on a little more weight.
Oh, honey, you've got a lot going on, huh?
Yeah, it's so much fun. I went to the doctors because I started having pain in both of my knees, and I guess I tore up my meniscus. Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, in both knees?
Both knees.
Son of a...
I know. So my question is every time I go to the gym, I jump on the treadmill, I get on the bike, I'm trying to tear it up and sweat and feel good. And I come home and then I'm crippled for 2 days. My knees swell up. I'm in pain.
Are they going to do surgery on that?
You know what, Joanne? I've looked into the surgery, and I think that I want to try and get this weight off first before I go into the surgery.
Well, you're not wrong. Okay. Yeah, you know, but that with a torn meniscus,
it'll never fully be repaired.
No. So you got to, that's a surgery, just to be clear. But but you make a good point, and the truth of the matter is that as you lose the weight, the pressure on your knees will be much better. So I've worked with many people in your condition, and it's just the weight on the joints is extremely stressful, and generally there are all kinds of issues from that, whether it be tendonitis or bursitis or meniscus tears or what have you. So that's fine. It's a little intimidating, it's a little overwhelming, it's a little bit frustrating.
Yes.
But you can work around it. Okay. Have you tried spinning? Have you tried rowing? Have you tried boxing? Have you tried swimming?
You know, I know I don't want to go to the gym and get in the pool right now, so that's out. But to get on the bicycle, do the spinning and the rowing, that's something I could definitely do.
Okay. And what about boxing?
I could definitely do that. I didn't even think about it.
Boxing is a great upper body workout.
Okay.
And it's going to elevate your heart rate. It's aerobic. It conditions your upper body. In a perfect world, should it be your only workout? No. But if you're getting on the spin bike some days, and you're boxing some days, and you're rowing some days, and then other days, you know, you're making sure to get your rear resistance training in there. You're doing your lat pull downs and your rows and your push ups and your chest press and your shoulder press. And, you know, you're getting all of that stuff in there. You're doing plank poses. You're doing all these body weight exercises that you can manage. Now, granted, I'm sure squats and lunges are going to kill your knees. Yeah, but you don't need them. And you can do some. Can you manage incline walking?
Yes, I can do that. I mean, there's a little discomfort, but I can definitely get through that.
Even if you did, let's say you managed, because a lot of times incline walking really is great for people with knee issues, and incline walking burns just as many calories as jogging.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on your incline and it depends on your jogging speed. But I've had people on an incline trainer for, you know, the entire season of Biggest Loser because they can't run for whatever particular issue is going on with their knees or their hips or what have you. And it burns, I have that little body bug on there, and I've managed to track their calorie burn, and it's extremely effective. So even if you could do, let's say, you get on your little incline walker and you do 15 minutes of hill walking, then you switch and you go 15 minutes of boxing, and the next day you go to the gym and you do your 15 minutes of rowing, and you do 15 minutes of, you know, spin bike. And by mixing it up as well and moving, you know, staying off that lower body as often as possible, incorporating it in smaller bursts, less frequently, maybe twice a week you do that incline walking, and then getting that resistance training in there. These are all ways to work around that injury and still burn a ton of calories. But remember, the most important part of this is your diet, because you can go to the gym and you can kick butt and you can burn 500 calories, but one piece of pizza is 500 calories.
True.
A big piece of pizza, but one piece of pizza, you know, a small fries, I think, is like, I don't know, 300-400 calories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got to be real mindful of what you're eating, because it's super frustrating when you go to the gym and you're kicking butt. But if you're not aware of your calories, then people go, I can't lose weight. There's something wrong with me. And it's not that at all. It's just that they don't know what they're eating, what's in the foods they're eating, and how much of those things they are eating. So remember, it's a combination, okay, of working around those injuries and really starting to become mindful of your calorie intake and the quality of your food.
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay, buddy. You know what I'm going to do also? I'm going to give you a membership to JillianMichaels.com. Janice, will you get all this stuff to Rosie?
Thank you.
Yeah, because...
Okay,
Because on JillianMichaels.com, you'll have all the recipes, there'll be menus, there's message boards, there's calorie trackers, there's all this stuff that we're taught, exercise routines, which you'll have to modify accordingly with the information I've just given you now, but that should be a real help for you.
Okay, gosh, that's so nice of you. Thank you so much. I'll definitely use it.
My pleasure, sweetie.
All right, Jillian, thank you so much.
And congratulations on your kid.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye.
precise.
She was good. She did a good job for our one call.
Yeah,
yeah,
awesome job.
She was very precise, and she was very willing to try new things. She didn't come up with any excuses. She was like, oh, I didn't think about it. I'm impressed
Isn't
with
that true? Because injuries give us such an excuse.
Oh, don't they
you know,
ever.
And she didn't. Was really cool.
She was awesome.
Her knees are blown, and she's still going to go for it.
I love it.
Oh, my God. We just can't carry on anymore. I'm verklempt. So happy. I think verklempt means, you know, maybe we should just say goodbye.
I think verklempt means that you're flustered.
Yeah, I think so. Spilkas. That's...
What are you, Yiddish now?
What happened?
I liked the Yiddish terms.
Since when?
Oh, always. There's a lot you don't...
Because it's so easy to pronounce?
Yeah.
Okay. Not always. No, you usually do those weird Canadian things.
Oh, that's
like
right.
Hooped.
Hooped.
By the way, I've met a few Canadians. They've never heard of that before.
That's bunk. They know that
No,
term.
They don't. They were like, what?
When
I was like,
hooped.
No, they don't know, dude.
You know...
Maybe you're just Yiddish and that's the problem.
No, I'm not Jewish, but I like the terms.
Uh-huh.
I like the Jewish terms, the Yiddish terms. Okay. Maybe we should end the show.
We'll do it.
Yeah.
Can she wear a yarmulke? Or is that just a guy thing?
That's just the guys.
My mom's Jewish. I should know this.
Yeah, see? And speaking of which, we just had Myrtle on, knowing our family history. Maybe you should check that out. Mom, did you ever wear a yarmulke?
No, but she didn't. Because it would have messed up her hair. And my mom is very well put together.
Yes, I've met your mother a couple times.
Well, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And let me tell you, she had some things to say about you.
Stop.
We gotta go. Okay, bye. Peace.
I was so high, I did not recognize the fire burning in her eyes. The chaos that controlled my mind. Whispered goodbye, she got on a plane, never to return again.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.